It's The Record from KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman. College sports mean big fun, big competition, and big money. The highest paid state employee in Washington, like many states, is the football coach. But is it fair for schools and coaches to rake in cash while student athletes get very little? Alan Starowski is the Sports Management Program Director at Drexel University. She says even though big universities offer athletic scholarships, those scholarships don't cover the full cost of schooling for the students.
There's been such a mythology around what an athletic scholarship actually covers. And as a nation, we're beginning to understand that there is no such thing as a quote-unquote full ride, that the athletic scholarship has a built-in shortfall between what it covers versus the full cost of attendance. And I haven't really heard a very good reason for why that is, apart from the fact that obviously it does limit what an athlete's compensation package is.
From the university point of view, they're paying less out to have these kids come.
Yes.
One question I have is that most kids who are recruited on athletic scholarships really spend a lot of their days training or going to class. And so I don't understand how they can afford to pay the difference between their scholarship and the cost of school when they don't actually have time to get a paid job.
Yeah, and this is becoming an increasingly difficult issue because we're now looking at circumstances where we have athletes who are literally involved in their sport year-round. The plain fact of the matter is that athletes are engaging in their sport for long, long hours per week, and this does preclude them from holding down other jobs that would help them to recover from that financial shortfall between what the athletic scholarship covers versus the full cost of attendance.
What happens if a student athlete is injured?
And this is very much up for discussion right now. Some schools will provide the opportunity for them to retain their scholarship for the term of the agreement, which typically is a one-year agreement. So an athlete may get hurt. They may have their expenses paid for one academic year, but that does not guarantee that they will be able to continue at their particular school with financial support.
It sounds a little bit like a short severance, so I wonder how the relationship between the college and the student athlete differs from the relationship between an employer and an employee.
This goes all the way back to the 1950s when there were worker compensation cases. Most recently, of course, with the Northwestern football team being recognized as employees under the National Labor Relations Board, that has emphasized that point more fully, although that's also being contested right now. I think part of what's happening here is that the NCAA knew back in the 1950s when it passed the athletic scholarship, when they codified that, that this was a pay-for-play situation and that it really did create an employment situation. And I think what's beginning to happen is that history is beginning to catch up with a lot of the mythologies that we've had about the standing that an athlete has. So I think into the future, we're going to see these things continue to be contested until such time as the athlete is really protected in terms of their interests. And right now, athletes really are not protected to the degree that they need to be.
I'm speaking with Ellen Starowski. She's co-author of the book College Athletes for Hire, The Evolution and Legacy of the NCAA Amateur Myth. Ellen, what would change if college sports just paid the athletes outright?
You know, in looking at the sheer amount of money that is coming into the system, it's highly unlikely that if athletes were to be compensated appropriately, that this would cause the system, to collapse.
How much would these student players be valued at if they were to be paid?
It's very difficult in the absence of a players' association and collective bargaining to know what that valuation would be. Some figures have indicated that football players might be valued at about, in the big-time programs, you know, at about $150,000 per year. Basketball players maybe at $250,000, and I'm talking approximate.
So we spoke a little bit earlier about the football players at Northwestern University taking that first step to forming a union. Is that the right way to go, do you think?
I think that we need some kind of an advocacy group that does not currently exist. Unionization certainly would, especially because of the fact that along with that would be the opportunity to collectively bargain. I think that creates the kind of framework that is currently missing and has been missing in the system for a long, long time. You know, if we look at coach salaries and the escalation of coach salaries over time, one of the reasons why that has happened over the past 15 to 20 years, and it's been dramatic, is the fact that they have representatives who sit down on their behalf and negotiate those contracts.
We're talking about mostly men's sports here because, of course, there are women who do sports, but few of them move on to a professional career. And in fact, most of those big-time men's sports in some form or other subsidize the women's sports on campuses since Title IX came into play, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a complicated question in terms of where all the money comes from, but yes, in a nutshell, it is true that the additional revenue that is generated by football and men's basketball does get parceled out in a variety of ways within an athletic department, and some of it can support other sports, both men's and women's. Much of it goes into coach salaries, into facilities, into recruiting efforts, So all of those things are financially supported.
What would happen if we decided that, yes, we should pay some of the male student athletes? What does that mean for Title IX?
Well, I think that it's an area that we don't know exactly how it would all play out and what the interpretations would mean. On one hand, if Northwestern prevails and if we end up with two models of college sport, one which is an employment model for the revenue producers and the other one which is still anchored in some kind of an educational model, the rules might change where Title IX may not even apply to the revenue producing athletes because they're in a different class, and the business of college sport is being recognized as a business.
So that would be something that would be hammered out in some of these court cases that are going through?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are many, many unknowns about how all this is going to play out.
Drexel University's Sports Management Program Director Ellen Starowski. Yesterday, a federal judge in California heard final arguments in a class action lawsuit. A retired professional basketball player sued the NCAA. He argued former student athletes should get financial compensation for the commercial use of their images. Ellen Starowski testified as an expert witness in that case.